Hello, and welcome to the second episode of We've Got Your Six on ndtnow.com, brought to you by SureHand, the self-service hiring platform that instantly matches industrial employers with verified tradespeople. This is your host, Mary Beth Michelli from We NDT. So as you know, on We've Got Your Six, we talk to prominent figures in the NDT industry and ask them the same six questions so we can hear their stories and get their take on where the industry's headed and get some advice for those just starting their careers. And now I'd like to introduce our guest, Ms. Antoinette Bailey. Tony is a level 3 in RT, ET, UT, PT, and MT. She is a US Air Force veteran, a successful business owner, and has served the NDT industry for over 20 years, working at places such as Honeywell, General Dynamics, and Structural Testing Systems. Hi, Tony, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Mary Beth. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and thank you for all that you do for NDT.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do now?
Absolutely. So TB3 NDT Consulting is an outside agency company. We provide services like classroom training for the companies such as in the aerospace industry, but really all industries, but primarily aerospace. Some of those companies, after attending classroom training, they need hands-on training. So we may go on site and help those inspectors learn specific inspections for a magnetic particle, liquid penetrant, you know, and other methods that they're certified in. Just really training them on how to inspect their product and also meeting customer requirements. So in addition to the training, we provide examiner services, mostly for level 2 inspectors. So these are brand new inspectors, new trainees who are being certified for level 2. So that would be the aerospace NAS 410 exams, as well as level 3 exams. Many of those exams for level 3s are for NAS 410, but we also train level 3s to pass the AS&T certification exams. And the final service that we provide, or the final service that I'm doing now, is auditor services. Many level 3s and professionals in NDT, they're not trained in quality assurance and auditing. And that's something that throughout my career has been something that I've always been trained in and focused on. So I help them prepare for their audits. And also sometimes I'm on site as an outside agency to get them through the audit. So those are the primary things I'm doing now.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you're really busy.
Yeah. Thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you got into NDT?
Oh yeah. You know, so I graduated high school in 1989. So that tells a little bit about my age, you know. And, but, you know, my 11th grade year and my senior year, I was saying, you know, what am I going to do? So I was actually looking into being an architect, even though I really probably didn't have the skill set for that. But realizing the cost for college and also to be able to take care of yourself financially, I joined the Air Force. So when I joined the Air Force, I actually applied to be a nurse. I was going to be a nurse. I really wanted to do that so I can have time to also go to college. Well, when I went to basic training, and then the next step was to go to training school for the Air Force. The Air Force said, well, rather than nursing, how about NDT? The Air Force, I didn't know this, but they were starting a program to get women into aircraft maintenance, and they thought a great segue for that would be NDT. Now, I found that out much later. So bottom line is, they put me in NDT, and I had no idea what it was. I didn't even know what it was. And honestly, I was the only girl, maybe one other lady, in the class of all men for ND High School. And honestly, I was challenged. I said, I don't know if this is going to be for me. This was the first 2 weeks of school. And I would say to you the same thing my instructor said to me. He said, listen, if you just apply yourself and give it some time, you will never have to look for a job. They will always come looking for you. And that's the same thing I say to my students and customers today. If you find a way to apply yourself, find a good mentor, and you'll never have to look for employment. They'll always find you. So that's how I got into NDT from the Air Force. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, that's excellent. I'm glad they had that program in place, for sure. So can you tell us a little bit now about what kind of methods you've used throughout your career, sort of where your specialties lie and really what you like to do most?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the methods that I'm certified in for both AS&T, as an AS&T NDT Level 3 and NAS 410, are liquid penetrant, magnetic particle, eddy current, ultrasonics, and radiography. So that covers for both AS&T and NAS 410. But for NAS 410, I have another certification called chemical processes. And it's kind of an NDT application. And my specialty is nitrile etch, which is the inspection of carbon steel materials. But I'm now transitioning into other types of etch for titanium and nickels. So it's kind of tough to say which one is my favorite, but I'm going to pick one. So, well, you know, in the Air Force, one of the things about the Air Force is that we had to be proficient in every method that you're certified in. Oh, including visual, by the way, VT. So you had to be proficient because, you know, when parts would come in, you know, you may have to determine, is this material ferromagnetic or non-ferromagnetic? You had to figure that out. And then you determine the best technique and application for MT and PT, and you process those parts. Now, of course, you know, you had your technical manuals and guidance, but you kind of almost had to engineer it yourself. And then if you found a possible crack or something like that, you may have to back it up with eddy current. You know, and then when you go out to the aircraft, you're using ultrasonics and radiography quite a bit, and sometimes interchangeably with eddy current as a backup method. But I will say to you, because in the Air Force, I spent so much time working on the F-15 fighter jet, which for that aircraft, you had to really be proficient in all five methods. But I spent a lot of time in radiography. I mean, you know, we have an expression. We x-ray everything on the aircraft from rooter to tooter, from front to rear. You know what I mean? I mean, everything, you know, flight controls, the wings. We had these spoiler boards to help the jet when it landed, it would help it to stop quickly. You know, intakes, everything, radiography. And that became my love and my passion. And I was really good. I can look at any material and determine a technique right here from my brain. I can, without even doing the math or the science behind it, I can figure out a technique and get it accepted by an aerospace prime or a military organization. And that's just like something that came to me naturally. So, you know, now that ultrasonics is becoming like the hot thing with advanced ultrasonics, radiography is right on its heels, at least for aerospace. I had to say, which one do I need to put most of my focus into? And my favorite would be is radiography.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Very cool on the F-15. That's fantastic work there. Must have been a lot of fun to be able to work on that.
Oh, let me tell you, the F-15 is an exciting aircraft. I mean, I am still in love with that, and I think about it often. So, you know, with F-15, you know, with so much aerodynamic capability, and I mean, just the maneuverability, and it's still up there. It's like one of the number one aircraft in the military. I learned so much about NDT working on that one aircraft. Now, in the Air Force, I worked on a multitude of different models. F-15, 60, all of the different fighter jet models I've touched in some way. And I've also worked heavies, like the C-5, which is one of the largest cargo, C-17, which is all composite. So, therefore, that kind of brought me to the next level for ultrasonics, ultrasonic inspection for composite structures.
Nice.
Yeah. But fighter jets is very exciting. There was nothing like, you know, in the morning, every morning we would go on something called FOD walk, F-O-D, to find, you know, anything that was on the ground that, that the engine intakes could suck in and cause foreign object defects. Anyway, we would go do our FOD walk to find those foreign objects. And in the morning, you see those F-15s taking off. It was just a beautiful thing to see them taking off. And one last thing about that, you know, my passion for the F-15 fighter jet, and really any fighter jet, but mostly that one. You know, when I went to the Gulf War, and the first day of the Gulf War, January 17th, the official day, to see them taking off with full afterburner, they would take off and just go straight in the air. It just builds so much patriotism inside your heart to know that you helped to get that aircraft off the ground and also get it back on the ground, get that pilot back safely. And I still feel that way when it comes to my new career field or my next career field or industry, which was corporate jet aviation. Same thing, same passion. And now, lately, as a level three, helping suppliers for Department of Defense, government, aerospace primes, helping those guys. Sometimes I'm like a little engineer, if you would, you know, trying to figure out what's required, what's the best application for this component. And then helping the level threes figure it out. And then put it on paper to make a procedure or a technique. And then getting the prime to approve it. That's a great feeling, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That all sounds really like really great experience. And of course, thank you for your service. That's really important to all of us and our country.
Oh, thank you so much.
So I assume that you've had quite a few mentors in this industry. We know that NDT is all about having a good mentor. And so can you tell us who some of those mentors are and you know, what they taught you about NDT?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So when I was in the Air Force, and I'm gonna segue that into my next phase of life, you know, the Air Force overall was one big mentor. I mean, when you're 18 years old and you're going in and you're trying to figure things out, they were like a second parent to help you figure out life, become a stable, responsible adult, right? They really taught you responsibility. But I remember when I was getting out of the military or making that decision to get out, and I said, I need help. I need someone to help me figure out, do I stay in? Do I get out? What do I do? What's next for Tony? Because I was a staff sergeant my next rank was going to be technical sergeant, which is a lot of responsibility. Technical sergeant is the person that everybody goes to in the shop, kind of like almost like a level three, if you would. And then master sergeant and so on. So I remember how lonely I felt making those decisions because I wasn't married, I was single, you know, family can't help you figure that out. So I went on and got out of the military and I started my first job, which was Honeywell Aerospace, a wheel and brake company in Houston. And they hired an outside agency to be our level three. His name was Ed Dukic, and he was my first true consultant. Now I'm going to tell you something. I didn't see it that way when I first met him. He was a tough, almost like a gunnery sergeant. Like a murderer. You know? And he was always, you know, yelling at me, don't do this, do it this way. And so my next job, which was Gulfstream Aerospace, a General Dynamics company, I was like, man, thank God I get to get away from Eddie. You know, because he put so much pressure and high expectations. But you know what? When I was at Honeywell, I got my first AS&T level three. I was 25 years old in magnetic particle because he was tough on me. And he was pounding me to get my AS. I didn't even know what an AS&T certification would do for you. I had no idea why it was important. I just did it so he would get off my back, right? You know, lay off. So when I went to Gulfstream, I was kind of hiding out. Now, that was a great job, by the way. Very exciting, corporate jets, big company. But he found me. He sought me out. He said, where you been? Why don't you call me? And he said, you're going to sit there and just, you know, be the top technician on the floor? Or are you going to do something greater than that? So I moved to New York and I took the job with structural testing. He was the level 3 for structural testing. Now, from a business perspective, I had a lot to figure out. And I thank my husband for that, because my husband helped me with a lot for business development. So I consider him a mentor when it comes to business and finance. But Eddie helped me figure it out to go to the next level for aid, not just following a procedure, but how to develop one on your own. How to learn a little bit about engineering, how components work, what's the function of it. Anyway, so Eddie is more of a hands-on applications level 3. So when I left structural testing and I started consulting with Hellyer NDT as an instructor, my next mentor, Mr. Eugene Sharpia. Eugene, he said, I'm going to take you by the hand and make sure you're a great instructor. I'm going to teach you the requirements of teaching class. In addition to that, how to be an awesome level 3. So Eddie taught me the groundwork of quality assurance and how to be a good level 3. Eugene taught me how to be proficient in documentation and vetting, you know, processes and people. So he really refined me as a level 3, I would say. Eugene did. And you know what? As far as helping other women, I look to you, Mary Beth, because all the things that you've done for women in NDT and ASNT and just the industry in general, I actually thank you, because you helped me in many ways as well.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot coming from you. But those are some really great examples of how mentoring really shapes somebody in NDT. And I think it can't be understated how important mentoring is to really bring people to the next level of being a level 3 or being an NDT engineer or doing quality assurance, because there's so much information that has to be digested, processed, and then communicated in a clear manner for other people to follow procedures or to be able to read specifications. So it's really, I love talking to people about mentorship in NDT for sure. And absolutely. So along that vein, what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's just starting out in this industry?
These are different times, right? In the 90s, I would say that we really had to put our best foot forward to earn credibility and respect. So I would say, number one, I think that the first thing a person has to do when they come to the industry is be willing to be open to having a mentor or be open to instruction. Don't think just because you went to NDI school or you went to college and you have a degree in engineering or something like that you know it all. The moment you take that first job, even if you feel that your education is beyond your mentor, whoever it is you're working for, be willing to listen, open to instruction. If you can't find a mentor at that company, you want to find somebody you have something in common with. And for this generation, don't set your expectations. What I mean is financial. Don't let finance be your motivator. How much am I going to get paid for what I've done? Well, you haven't done anything yet. Take a minute to put on humility first. And then after humility comes knowledge. Respect those who are around you, who are trying to pour into you, even if it's hard. I mean, if I would have walked away from Ed or ran away from him because he was tough, I probably would never have. Matter of fact, because he was tough on me, I went on to get the rest of my certifications from ASNT. And sometimes he said to me some things that were very hard to swallow. If I would have had that wall up of arrogance and shutting him out or just becoming offended, I wouldn't have gone to the next level. you know, I remember some things he said to me was really rough around the edges. So, you know, some people would just say, I'm not going to be bothered with that guy, you know? So, I think that they should be willing to invest in themselves and don't expect the company to always be the, how should I say, the avenue financially to get you where you want to go. Sometimes you have to dig in your own pocket. You got to save and get your certifications on your own, especially if you want to be a level three. You know, but for the young trainee, sometimes they can become very easily offended by what people say and what they do. As long as it's not breaking any human resources rules, you know, there's a lot to be gained from that tough love. You maybe don't even realize that somebody's trying to reach out to you. There you go, you know. So especially for NDT engineers, I think it may be a little bit hard sometimes for those guys to maybe listen to someone that's older, wiser, especially with those guys. Yes, you have a great education, but you can combine that with someone else's experience and be awesome, an awesome team. So having an attitude of teamwork, having good work ethic, and, you know, also great ethics in general, I think those are the key things people need to focus on when they're new. It will carry you a long way.
For sure. And I definitely see that as people come into the industry with their education. You know, the whole NDT certification scheme is all about education, experience, education, experience. And it's so important for new people to really understand that that experience is invaluable. And so you have to be like a sponge to really take it all in from these people who have been working in the field for a long time. They know what they're doing. They know a little of the secrets of how to do a certain method that'll help get you the best results. And maybe you're not learning from a textbook. You're really learning on site. So I can't agree more about the humility and knowing that you're going onto that site. And if somebody's going to teach you, regardless of how they're teaching you, if they're going to teach you, you got to just absorb as much knowledge as you can so that you can be, you're investing in yourself. So you can be the best, you know, NDTer that you can possibly be.
Yes, absolutely.
So true.
Absolutely.
So I guess so our last question, we always ask people, where do you see the industry going in the next 10 years? And so we're in a weird time right now, right? We're mid COVID-19. Everybody's sort of shut down except for, you know, some of the industry, but maybe tell us where you see the industry going in 10 years. And if you want to, you can sort of talk about where we are currently and where you see the industry going in the next year.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
And if you know the future, I will be very interested in if you're able to do some fortune telling there.
Yeah, some fortune telling, exactly. You know, well, I'm happy to talk about where we're going in the next 10 years. This year, I think that there is going to be a scramble for recovery. There may be an uptick in manufacturing because people are just going to be so anxious to kind of catch up. I kind of think that I get the feeling that's the case. I don't think, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think that people are going to say, hey, let's slow down, take it easy. Those who are laid off, leave them there. I think that I know that there's a lot of, you know, projects that are just sitting by the wayside waiting for us to say ready, set, go. So I think this year we are going to have a lot of production, people trying to catch up. They're going to hire those people back. They're going to try to get back into the high-paced production. The problem is who is going to pay for it? You know? They're going to have the money to do these things. So I think it's going to be a little bit disorganized. Maybe everything's going to be knee-jerk. Like, hurry up. Let's get it done. We got to get back in there. Right?
Yeah, I think maybe we're going to see 12 months worth of work in 6 months. And I think it's going to be hard for everybody to keep up, and who's going to pay that premium for the fact that we're all going to be working double time
to get it done. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot of slow pay invoices that normally be 30 days, it's going to be 90, maybe 120.
Yeah.
So we're all going to have to put on some level of patience and understanding in that regard. And but I think once, you know, maybe we get just get going again, hopefully by summer, I think we'll be able to recover, because it's not like we don't have the projects to do. You know, the projects are there. They're just waiting for us to get back to it. Like, everything was just dropped. So that's what I think is coming now for the next 10 years. I would say overall, for all industries, and you probably know where I'm going, everything is going automation, robotics, everything is going to involve some sort of computer software. I mean, you know, in oil and gas, you're seeing it with the automated UT. Everything is automated UT with the rotational scans, piping systems, things like that, magnetic flux leakage. Everything's going to a faster pace with better accuracy. In order to do that, it's going to have to be computers involved. And I want to talk a little bit about that regarding aerospace. Just saying in general, the days of analog testing, relying on the inspector, I think are being moved aside. Inspectors are going to have to know how, at least in eddy current ultrasonics and radiography, you're going to have a little background in some sort of software device. And that's going to require a bit of training. The thing that I think is being missed in that is quality assurance is going to get you put on the back burner with speed and automation and robotics. People tend to rely on that as opposed to, what are you looking at? Do you even understand the data that you have collected? You know, and what about all of the quality assurance that you need to ensure? How do you know the accuracy of that fast-paced scan? So I think we're going to have to start looking at probability of detection models and employing experts in that. So now for aerospace, I'm even seeing it. So some of the aerospace primes, there's a lot of pressure in the casting world for faster speed inspection, even with a method like liquid penetrant. Some of the companies are buying larger penetrant systems. I actually have put in the last 2 years, I put in like three large aerospace, liquid penetrant lines. Some of them are automated. You put the part on a bunch of parts on the tree. It goes through the entire process and you have an inspector waiting at the other end. And you have a maintenance person monitoring the system. Now that's for liquid penetrant. For magnetic particle, for stationary systems, it's kind of hard to automate, but it can be done. And I'm seeing a lot of automotive companies going that way. The problem is the inspectors are so busy looking at the computer and making sure the numbers are there, they're not paying attention to the technique. That's an issue. All right, so now eddy current for aircraft engines, with all of the recent headlines with engine failures, I've been getting a lot of calls from aerospace engine primes and suppliers to those primes to implement automated eddy current inspections. So we have the same issue, making sure that inspector is paying attention to the scan. I mean, there's some scans I've been on for 4 hours, Mary Beth. I've been there 4 hours, so you have to make sure that person's not sitting back eating bonbons and you'd be looking at that screen, you know, or going outside having a smoke break. Same thing with ultrasonics. I've been seeing a lot of forging houses with various immersion ultrasonic applications for very large. There was one that I went to evaluate. The system was bigger than an Olympic sized swimming pool, and it was, I don't know, maybe 8 feet of water. Wow. For very large engine fan hubs. Now the problem that we had was training. proficiency. And you know what? Later on, there was some probability detection problems there. It was so caught up in the technology. And last but not least, it's the same thing with radiography, with the onset of digital applications. That technology is moving faster, and the level threes are like grabbing your head saying, I can't wrap my brain around this technology. What the heck is a pixel anyway? You know? So anyway, with those five methods, even with Lynetta Lech, I've had at least two companies come to me and ask about automated inspections using etch. Well, etchants are alkalines and acids and different types. I mean, it's hard to ensure accuracy with humans, let alone automation. So I'm not against it. I'm all for it. I just think we have to, instead of having a plan about speed and numbers, we need to concentrate on applications more and making sure that we keep the inspector involved and not just, how should I say, put those folks by the wayside.
For sure. And I think, you know, I think it's going to affect every aspect of what we do, right? Even from training, the amount of training that people are going to have to get, and it's going to have to be application specific, software specific. It's going to be very intensive in order for people to get the results that they want. But I think it's also going to affect how we do auditing in this industry, you know, because that audit is going to suddenly be extremely important to make sure that people are doing the, having the checks and balances to make sure that they understand how that system works and how the probability of detection is affected by various different parts of the software, various different parts of what the person working the equipment or at least monitoring the equipment, how, what they do.
So I have three comments about that, and you know, I'll be brief. Number one, I have been involved with some, well, I've been called in to assist where the inspectors did not find the flaw of interest. And after investigations, they found that those missed flaws were related to failures on the aircraft that were very publicized, you know? So backtracking, how did that missed call happen? You know? And so one of the things we find is that people just didn't understand ultrasonics. You know, they're so busy, hey, here's a machine, let me show you how to use the machine. But how does ultrasonics work? It's a method.
Right.
That's being left behind. Same thing with digital radiography. So, so therefore, one of the things that I do during my performance evaluations of personnel and practical exams and auditing, I have them explain to me each step of that process. So level threes, or even quality assurance personnel, they need training on that as well. How to vet your own personnel.
Yep.
And one last thing, the manufacturers that sell the equipment, they're not, how should I say, they're not interested in training the person on how all of the applications work in detail. They're interested in, are you going to buy it? Let me drop it off. Here's the buttons and whistles. Good to go. Thumbs up. Goodbye. So they have a responsibility to offer a service for training. And I don't think that they're taking that responsibility seriously. You know, but I think that eventually it's going to come. So therefore, I think it's all good. We just move it at a fast rate. It's all technology and not as much quality. So there you go.
Yep. And I think that certainly certification or at least recommended practices are going to have to keep up with how we manage this kind of thing. As somebody who works a lot with manufacturers, it really behooves them to provide the correct training and recommendations about who can work the equipment, because eventually somebody will say, well, it was the equipment's fault.
Yes.
So it makes sense to have a good recommendation about somebody should have an ASNT level 2 understanding of the method plus the training of how to utilize the equipment and how to utilize the software in order to be able to run that line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Manufacturers of systems are putting a lot of that responsibility on the sales rep. When last week, the sales rep, he probably was selling cars, bless his heart. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they need to make sure that that rep is, well, you know, I think that they should, hey, maybe that's another niche for inspectors. Level, there you go. Level two inspectors. Mm-hmm. Could be, you know, subject matter experts hired by manufacturers.
Yeah, for
to
sure.
To some degree. Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the bottom line is I see a lot of level threes of a certain age, you know, frustrated because these things are happening faster than they can control. Mm-hmm. They walk into the plant and all of a sudden they have a $3 million system waiting on them to figure out and approve.
Yeah.
And it's a huge gap right now.
Yeah, so. For sure. For sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today, Tony. It was a real pleasure as always.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you all again for listening to We've Got Your Six at ndtnow.com, sponsored by SureHand. Let good jobs find you.